I'm excited for New Year's. I'm excited for what God has in store. There's just something that always happens with the New Year. There's just like that expectation, what Patty was saying. There's just something in the air of newness, fresh start, starting over of, man, something happened in 2015 and now we're in 2016, right? I mean, just certain things happen with New Year's. For instance, gym memberships, double, triple. How many, anyone guilty of the New Year's gym membership? No one wants to admit it. That's okay. Got a little elliptical. Nice. Gym memberships. Oh my goodness. I was thinking about, this has nothing to do with New Year's, but I was thinking about this. Does anyone know what the opposite of Disneyland is? Does anyone know? The happiest place on earth is Disneyland? So the opposite, the saddest place on earth, does anyone know? It's the DMV. It's the DMV. The DMV, no, just hear me out. Just hear me out. I was thinking about New Year's, and my brain works in weird ways. I can't explain it. I was thinking about New Year's 2016, and then I got to the DMV somehow, and I started writing about, think about it, DMV, Disneyland, DMV, happiest place on earth, saddest place on earth, and if you like the DMV, you're weird, okay? The DMV, they have similarities. Both, you wait in line for hours, and when it's finally your turn, it only lasts like a minute, right? Like you finally get up there and you're like, I just need to turn in this paper. Can you put up a Dropbox? Have you ever found out about the DMV? If you have a piece of paper that you need to like send in to get your tags on your car, we call them and they're like, oh, it'll take you 6 to 8 weeks to get your tags to turn this. What's proof of correction on the car or whatever. And they're like, but if you go in and wait in line and turn it in, you can get it instantly. And so Patty, being the bigger person between us, decided, fine, I'll go and do it. And I was like, thank you for taking one from the team. And so the DMV, they have all these different similarities. Like, you always sit next to someone that something's going on with them. I don't know. Same in line. You don't get to choose who you stand next to. There's so many similarities. And it's just bizarre. You pay an obscene amount of money, no matter what. It's like, oh, I just came into, that'll be $2 billion. Oh, thanks. My car's worth $500. How is this tag more than my car? You know, it's just interesting. And I've hated the DMV just my whole life. And if you work there, I'm sorry. I still like you, okay? But I talk about your place a lot. You're welcome. DMV, I was thinking about this. I really do have an irrational fear of tests. Like, I just don't like taking tests. And I remember when I turned 16, I had to go to the DMV, and my parents were like, no, you're going to get a license because we're tired of driving you around. And you can drive your brothers around. You can get groceries. You can go to school. You can do all of the above. You just need to get a license. Right now, this is what's going to happen. And I remember going to the DMV, and I'd studied for the test. Briefly in the car right there. Okay. And so I to get a license, you need to pass a written test and a behind the wheel test, right? You can't get past it unless you got like a hookup there who just is like, check. True story. That really did happen to a friend of mine once. They go up and they're like, they just don't want me to drive. And they're like, well, fine, I'll pass you. Didn't have to do anything. And I was like, what? That's illegal. Tell me who this person is. I want to go to them. So I go my first time, take my written test. And I remember in Oregon, it's different than California. Your written test is on a computer and it's automated. And you have to take, it's something like 50 questions. And they're all tricky questions. It's not like, should you drive over a person? No! They ask you questions that are like meant to make you fail. I remember the question that I failed on my first time taking the test was multiple choice, four things. What should you do first before driving? This is an Oregon question. It's not in California because it's too silly to be in California. The first one was buckle your seatbelt. I was like, that's a good option. Next one was check your mirrors. I was like, that's a great option. Third one is make sure you know where you're going to drive. That's a great option too. Number four, walk behind and make sure a child is not laying under your car with their head behind the tire. And I was like, that's silly. Who would put that on a test? That was the right answer. I was like, what? Is this a thing that we need to be concerned about? And I remember, like, who wrote these questions? It was crazy. And then I remember failing the written. And in Oregon, you're allowed to retake the written the next day. So I was like, sign me up again. It's like, I got that question down. And we didn't have that question again. So went back, and then I passed that, and then I scheduled for my behind the wheel. And I'm sitting in my car. My parents had bought me a car. My parents had bought me the cheapest car they could find. And do you remember the car? It was a Buick LeSabre 88. Two door. One door. The car, the seats, you know how when you have one door, you open the car and the seat like folds and slides forward? The car door, you didn't do that. The car door was the length of the car. You can open and get into the front and the back seat at the same time in my Buick LeSabre. I thought it was a normal car. I also thought that when you pushed on the brakes and sometimes they felt loose and dropped to the floor, that was normal. That was how I totaled my car. But going to the DMV of this rock solid car, took it to DMV, and the guy comes out, and my mom's there, and she's all proud. She's like crying. She's like, my baby's growing up. And goes, and the guy goes, and unbeknownst to me, they do a quick check on the outside of the car before getting into the car. I had my seatbelt on because I'm like, I'm not going to mess this up. I'm not going to get dinged. I got in the car before he even walked outside, and I had my seatbelt on. I was like, he's not going to even know the timing, because I know you can get, like, in Oregon, they fail you on everything. So I was like, already everything checked. Go. He walks to the front. He walks to the window and says, I'm sorry, you have failed. Come back again. And I was like, what? My seatbelt's already on. And he goes, your front light, your daytime running light is out. And that's an instant disqualification. And I was like, Mom? And I totally blame her for it. And she felt bad. And she got on the phone book, because the internet wasn't really big back then. Got on a phone book and started calling through every single DMV, calling about wait times, and found a DMV that would let me take the behind-the-wheel test, because usually it takes about a month to schedule. Found one DMV that was open the next day that I can go in, and I took my dad's car, and we're getting in, and I had my seatbelt already on, because I was like, I'm not going to fail again. And the guy gets in, and he slides in, and I'm like, hi, how you doing? I'm like trying to be nice. And he's like, you speak English? I was like, I do. You do too. This is a trick question. Am I gonna fail again? And he goes, wow, man, it's so good to be able to talk. Usually I just sit in here and I have no idea what they're saying, and everyone's so nervous. And I was like, oh man, thanks. And he goes, well, let's just go out around the block. And we went around the block, and he's like, oh yeah, how's your day going? I was like, it's going great. How's your day? And he goes, it's terrible. I sit in a car and no one knows English, and it's boring, and I don't like my job. And I was like, man, I'm sorry. And so we go, and he's like, just go around. And then we literally go out of the block, drive, and he's like, you're good. Just come back in. And comes back in and passes me 100%. And I was like, and that's the favor of God. And I was thinking about this. 16. Everyone say 16. 2016. The year 2016. Did you know my irrational fear of tests? This is a true story on me. Irrational fear of tests 2 years ago was the year 2014 that I got my California license. I've been living in California since 2003. There's a time gap there that I had an Oregon license and Oregon license plates. And it lasted quite a while because I was so afraid I wouldn't pass. What was I going to do if I didn't pass the test? I was so scared. And eventually push came to shove where I had to have a California license. We were doing something where I can't remember what it was, but like I had to have proof of a California license. And I remember like sweating, reading the book, like, oh, I gotta pass, totally passed. But I was so scared to take it. And we were just driving. And I did get pulled over 6 years to living in Oregon. But if you have an Oregon license and Oregon license plate and Oregon proof of insurance, that's three things in your favor proving that you live in Oregon just visiting. And I remember getting pulled over. The officer goes, "Are you visiting here?" And in my head, I was like, "I am visiting this city that I'm in right now." He goes, "Oh, so you don't live here?" And I was like, "Oh, no, I don't. Because I live in my head in El Monte, not in Pasadena. It's a whole different area." And so I remember that was, I'm confessing this lie right now. I'm sorry, police officer. The Lord knows. He knew. And so I had to bring it to light eventually, and here it is. And I had this irrational fear of studying, or irrational fear of preparing, irrational fear, because I felt like I was just going to fail. I kept failing, and I really do have this fear of failure in a lot of areas of my life. I might not try something because I'm afraid I'll fail in the first place. It's something I'm personally overcoming. I just wanted to share that. The number 16. 2016. I did all this research on the number 16 in preparing for God to speak a word over a church. It's something I've done every year I've been a pastor, that I always go to God and say, this number means something for us as a body of Christ. 16. And I remember God bringing out two things. Number 16 has significant importance in North America for 16-year-olds. It's true, Piper. It's true. 16. It's the year that you're able to get licensed. It's not the year that you do. You're eligible to become licensed. Licensed to what? To operate a vehicle to take you where you want to go. Oh my goodness. This can preach. I love it. At the beginning of every single DMV license book across the United States in every state, it always starts with the same sentence. A license is a privilege, not a right. How many people have read it? How many people have not? You probably are driving without a license right now. A license is a privilege, not a right. A license is a privilege, not a right. We have a privilege to be licensed to drive the vehicle of change this year. It's not a right. We're not entitled to it, but we have the privilege to work towards it. God doesn't just show up and make our lives simple and just says, like a magic genie, and grant us wishes. We have the privilege to step out in faith and believe for what God's going to do. The vehicle of change. We can be licensed this year. So let's look what that looks like. I wrote down this statement of belief, this sentence, this motto for this year, if you will. I'll read it a couple times. You have the privilege to take the test to prove you can be trusted to operate the vehicle. You have the privilege to take the test to prove you can be trusted to operate the vehicle. This message is just 4 points. It's Vision Sunday. We're talking about what's coming this year. The 4 points are just the four main keywords out of this one sentence. You have the privilege to take the test to prove you can be trusted to operate the vehicle. I'm going to say it four more times throughout the message on the points. So there you go. Number one, the privilege. The privilege. It's what God has done for us. He gave up his son for us. It's about the grace we walk in. Is the privilege. Galatians 2:20. I have been crucified with Christ, and it is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me, and the life which I now live in the fresh flesh. Am I reading that wrong? I need to wear my glasses today. Flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. The privilege. Check this out. The privilege is also the access to God and what he gives us. Healing, prosperity, peace, comfort, joy. It's the privilege. That's the privilege. Some people in their Christian walk are really just stuck in this point. They're stuck in the privilege. They haven't ventured further into all that God has in store for them. It's all about grace and mercy, and it ends there. Well, there's nothing wrong with it, but God didn't call us to be believers in the kiddie pool. He called us to jump into the deep ends of faith in this life. I'm personally not satisfied with splashing around in the kiddie pool. I'm not going to go there. We don't have time. Never mind. I was going to make fun. Let's talk about what's found in the kiddie pool. But we all know. 1 John 5:15. And if we know that he hears us in whatever we ask, we know that we have the requests that we have asked for. The privilege. Privilege is knowing him. Privilege is him giving up his son. The privilege is everything that we get, the relationship, the things we can work towards. The privilege is just the open door for everything he has in store for us with himself at the middle. Does that make sense? If Christianity was a house or a home or a welcoming home, it's the privilege is the door opening. And everything that we can obtain, the healing, the prosperity, everything is sitting inside of it. With Jesus seated on the throne in the middle. Because we have the privilege of relationship. We have the privilege of miraculous healing. We have the privilege of all these different things. That's point number one. And I think I wouldn't be doing my role as your pastor justice if that's where we parked it for the rest of me pastoring the rest of my life. I don't think I would do that justice if we just stayed there. I don't think you would do your life justice if you just stayed there. I don't think you would do the justice of who the lives you'll impact if you stayed right there. Go out into the depths. Statement again, you have the privilege to take the test to prove you can be trusted to operate the vehicle. I preached on this a few months ago. What hasn't been tested cannot be trusted. What hasn't been tested cannot be trusted. You can't just like call up the DMV and say like, I got this. And like, man, you sound confident. Yes, you do. Let me send your license in the mail. That's not how it works, right? It worked for one lady I knew, but she still had to show up and be there. It's craziness. Can't believe she did that. Number two, the test. You will be tested, but have you prepared? You will be tested, but have you prepared? Showing up to church a couple times a month and reading a verse on Easter and Christmas once a year isn't exactly preparing. That's not the preparation needed. We've all been to some form of school, whether we graduated college, master's degree, whatever, sixth grade, seventh grade, whatever the last grade, there is tests in school. Some people can get A's by just like looking at their note page once and walk in and just like get 100% on the test. Patty. Like some people are just built that way. Some people need to work for the higher grades. You need to prepare. We've all had that one test where you show up, you didn't even know that test was there that day, and you just lucked out and you got 100%. You're like, thank you, Jesus. And we've all had that one test. You walk in and you studied for like 500, 600 hours. You walk in and you sit down and you're like, you look at the test and you're like, I've never seen that word before. What is happening? You know, there's always that. And that's what I'm getting at. Are you prepared for the tests that are before you? I got a whisker. The test spot. Something going on up here. Are you preparing? Are you preparing? Because preparing is a lifestyle. It's not a moment. Preparing is a lifestyle. Preparing is something ongoing. The Bible actually talks about preparing for tests. You know how it describes it? Discipleship. That's the word for it. Discipleship. The root word of discipleship is actually discipline. It's that same concept of in the military, you are in discipline to graduate. Discipline of understanding the lifestyle you're about to enter into. That's what discipleship is. It's not a one-time class to get knowledge. It's coming under that knowledge and living it out. That's discipleship. That's what preparing for the test is. Have you lived a discipled life to prepare? You will face the test, but the results are on you. Your preparing starts now. Did you know? I thought this was so interesting. This blew my mind. And I was telling Patty about it. So I researched the number 16, looked at different all the regions around the world, historical content, ethnicities, how it all plays together. 16. Looked at all the 16s. I just obsessed over it. 2016. What is God speaking to us? And I found it's kind of interesting. The Bible actually has one meaning for the number 16. A lot of times you have a general meaning for a number, and then it branches out of all the different instances that occur, and they make up that general meaning of a number. But 16 is very, very specific. The definition of 16 in the Bible is loving kindness. That's what it is. Number 16. It only represents loving kindness. The definition of loving kindness represents the actions behind love. Just because you love someone doesn't mean you've done something with them or to them. It's the actions behind it. It's what are you actively doing with that love? Like, what's happening? And so, the Bible, I found kind of interesting. Number 16. Do you know there's a 16 true-false test by God in the Bible? I'm not making this up. I'm totally serious. Really? There's 16 things listed out by God with the understanding of loving kindness, because 16 represents loving kindness. There's 16 things God said, I took this test for you. I took this 16 loving kindness test for you. And then he flips it and says, are you going to take this 16-part loving kindness test for others? The test is found in 1 Corinthians 13, starting at verse 4. 16. Ready? Love is patient, 1. And is kind, 2. Love does not envy, 3. Love does not parade itself, 4. It is not puffed up, 5. It does not behave rudely, 6. Does not seek its own, 7. Is not provoked, 8. Thinks no evil, 9. Does not rejoice in iniquity, 10. But rejoices in truth, 11. Bears all things, 12. Believes all things, 13. Hopes all things, 14. Endures all things, 15. Love never fails. 16. True false test. I thought it was interesting. I just wanted to bring that out. I thought it was so unique, so precise, that the Bible describes the number 16 as loving kindness and then has the audacity to give 16 ways to be loving kindness. Does that blow anyone else's mind right now? Just me? I thought it was, I was taken aback when I was like, are you kidding me right now? The definition of 16 is loving kindness, and then you give 16 ways to be loving kindness to other people? What? Blew my mind. God stepped out, said, these are the 16 ways I love you. The 16 ways I respond to you, 16 ways that I do this But I want you to take it, turn it, and do that to others. It doesn't just stop with you. And that's your test. That's your test. See, the privilege is everything I am and everything I have for you. But the test is what you do with it. The test is what you do with it. So, Vision Sunday, one focus of this church is to equip you to pass the test with flying colors. As a pastor, I want to make sure you pass that test. As a pastor, I want you to step out in faith. I want you to bring this loving kindness that God is so prevalent to share with us in 2016, the love for others. But beyond the love for others, doing something about that love for others. It's not good enough to just be like, oh, I love you. God said, no. There's action behind it. If you love them, do something about it. If you love them, step out. Okay, so been praying about this as what I'm hearing from God and also taking to the staff of saying, what is God saying to us collectively with my wife? What is God saying? How are we going to pastor church? And how are we going to equip us to step out and pass this loving kindness test? What is it? And God spoke a couple things for this year. I've been saying the statement a lot, make the change, be the change. This preparing for this test, this taking this test is making the change. Make the change. What does that look like? One way we want to equip you all is to hear God. Hear God. Polls are constantly done throughout the history of this world, and most people that are Christians say, I want to hear God. I've always wanted to hear God. I want to walk by that. I want to know what he's saying to me. I don't want to make a stupid decision because I didn't hear the voice of God over this. I want to trust in God on this. So one of the things we scoured looking for resources and not reinvent the wheel, but what is God's hand over for our church? Just how this came about is just so miraculous, and I got to hurry because we're going to run out of time, but I want to share everything. I was talking to one of my mentors of how I hear the voice of God. I do very specific, unique things to hear the voice of God. And what I was doing is I had how I read the Bible, and then I would step out of that, and then I would do certain things, certain practices to hear the voice of God. And so they were kind of separate but joined and is preparing. And I was talking to my mentor. And he's like, oh, what you just described actually is a resource that exists. How you hear the voice of God right now is that's a thing. And I was like, come on. He goes, no, I'm serious. He goes, I do that same thing. And that literally is a book that's out there. And I was like, what? Someone wrote it out of my thoughts? That's what I do? And so he showed me this resource. It's called the Lectio Divina Journal. And it's not, I know a lot of us have tried journaling or tried doing consistent devotions. It's like that, but a little bit different. And the entire goal of this journal is to simply hear the voice of God and act on it. That's the end goal of it. It's not a ton of heavy reading. It focuses more on doing what you're reading. So it gives very small scriptures each day. Each day is about 4 to 5 verses in total, which isn't a lot. So if you've done the life journey, you're like, oh, that's 5 chapters less than that. And here's what I love. Patty's going to talk about a couple of her favorite things, but I was going through it. And it's just down to some of the things that I do personally are in here. And it bogs my mind that, I mean, God knew exactly what he was doing by when I shared with my mentor this. How it sets up its week is the best setup I've ever seen, ever for hearing the voice of God. Listen to this. On Monday, you look at an Old Testament narrative It's like a story from the Old Testament and how it applies to you. Tuesdays are out of the New Testament epistles. Wednesday is Psalms to encourage you in the middle of the week. Thursday is reading about Jesus. Friday is to give you wisdom at the end of your week and preparing for the next week. It's in Proverbs. Saturday, I love this, and this is one of my wife's favorite parts too, and sorry, I'm going to step on her toes and talk about this. Saturday is a weekly examine. There's no reading. Saturday, you sit down with an open page of notes, and then it has things for you to reflect on. What are things that hurt you this week? What are things that brought you joy this week? What are things that God, you felt, spoke to you, but you didn't quite understand yet? And you write them out. It's sitting there to meditate and reflect on what God was doing. And then on Sunday, it's just a note page for church. Is that interesting? I thought it was so uniquely put together. So wonderfully part of this system. And it the first part explains it. And so what we did as a staff is we ordered some of them, and we have them here. And if you're interested, let me know. And I would love to partner with you and go through this. So the quirky thing about this book is it's actually just January to June 2016. This isn't a... So the 2016 version is different than the 2017 version, which is different than the 2015 version. It's different every time because it flows through the Holy Spirit of what is God speaking to this season. And I thought it was so unique and so precious. So that's one of the areas that I want to, as a pastor, bring out. This is how we're going to pass the test together. Okay. Second thing. How many people, maybe you're in work in school district or you work somewhere where it's a government agency where you have to take CPR and first aid training every 2 years. Does anyone have to do that? You guys don't have to do that? Oh, that's an LA thing then. I had to do that. It's a what? New teacher thing. Oh. Whoa. Anyways, this debunks my entire point right now. But I was told I had to. It goes back to the new teacher thing. So the rule is if you work with children in LA, I guess, you have to take CPR and first aid every 2 years. You have to. If you can't get out of it, you're uneligible for certain things. Also, if you have you ever had like a knife, maybe this is more for the guys, or a steak knife, where it works great for like the first like month or something if you use it a lot. And then after like a while, you're like, this bread is so tough. You know, it's just like, it's just not working well. Or like the bread is just, it basically turns from like this fluffy loaf into like the unleavened bread during like Easter time. You know what I'm talking about? It's like, what happened? like knives dull, right? And I fully believe that's the life of a Christian. We have to keep sharpening ourselves to stay in the game. We have to keep up on things. And so one of the things we're going to be offering this year is classes. And Patty hates the word classes, we're going to call them classes for whatever reason. classes to resharpen us through this year. Resharpen it. And there's different classes and there's different ranges and different things you learn in the different classes, and it's going to be throughout the year. And I'm really excited about this. One of the classes is, it's how to study the Bible like I study the Bible. How to do these word studies. How to actually look at the Hebrew and the Greek and interpret. I'm adding on too many like consonants. Okay. Interpret and go through and understand what is God speaking in this context and how to change that context into our life today. That's like one of the classes we're focusing on. Another class is just how to fall in love with reading your Bible. Has to deal with worship and daily practices. So I want to encourage you, and God really spoke to me on this. I needed to say the comment, This does not negate your past. It only adds to it. Okay? This adds to it. This resharpens. The knife is there. We just want to resharpen you to what you were and better. Amen? Okay. I'm going to skip that point. All right. You have the privilege to take the test to prove you can be trusted to operate the vehicle. Number three, the trust. The trust. So in 1 Corinthians 13, 4 on, we learned what the test is. But I love God because he puts the trust before the test. Because if we can get a glimpse of what he'll trust us with, will have the audacity to take the test. So no one just wants to go out and take a test just to take a test. You know, I don't find myself wake up on a Saturday saying, man, I kind of want to just take the SATs today. No, I don't. But God gives us glimpses of what we'll get if we take the test. So before the test, he gives us a glimpse. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 1. If I could speak all the languages of earth and of angels and didn't love others, I would only be a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I had the gift of prophecy, and if I understood all of God's secret plans and possessed all knowledge, and if I had such faith that I can move mountains but didn't love others, I would be nothing. If I gave everything I have to the poor and even sacrificed my body, I could boast about it. But if I didn't love others, I would have gained nothing. 1 Peter 4:10. As each has received a gift, use it to serve one another as good stewards of God's varied grace. The trust. Something I do whenever I go into a church or a ministry or really anything, if I'm asked to go speak at a location or a conference or whatever, I just do this kind of subconsciously. I'm always trying to investigate what that place has in regards to God's favor. Every location has God's favor on it in some form. There's something very unique, very special to that ministry that God's favor is over it. Like, have you ever been to a church and you see like one thing done really well? That's like that God's favor is on that. You know, it's, you see things that are just happy. Like Rick Warren, the favor of God is over that man to disciple people, okay? And he's capitalized on. He's like, I'm going to stand in God's favor and move where God moves because he's showing up in a mighty way. All right? Favor of God. I was really curious about what our favor of God is at our church. And I really saw it whenever two things happen. And when they come together at the same time, it's like it's evident God's favor is there. It's obvious. Number one, when our church comes together as a family to take care of something. Okay, that's the first part. And number two, it's when it has to do with children. Especially, look at VBS. Look at what's the mission trip, David, that you guys did a while ago, the Apache, when you guys did that. What's the New Orleans, what was it called? Katrina? Yes. Pools on top of roofs. When our church comes together to accomplish something, the favor of God is there. But it's amplified when it revolves around children. Okay, it's just evident. I mean, if you look at our church, you're like, oh, yeah, that's so obvious. Like, why didn't I see that before? Why haven't I talked about that? Why haven't I thought about that? And I, for me, I always like to to question God and just say, God, why? Show me the path. Someone at some point has sown seed and now your favor is here. And I want to know why, because I don't want to mess this up. That's really how my prayer goes. God, how, why, where, what's going on here? And I found it. It's really interesting. I was sharing it with council members, and it's really interesting. I was going through the financial records, and I kept seeing one thing pop up that we were giving to, and I don't know if anyone actually knows we were giving to it, but every single month we give to this organization called Tender Life. Have you guys known about this? Tender Life. And so for me, I assumed that was something else, and then I think Sterling was like, oh no, that's this. And I'm like, oh, that makes sense. And so I started learning what it was. Tender Life, if you didn't know, this is the this is their mission statement. This is their about on their website. Tender Life is a faith-based nonprofit 501c3 organization that provides homeless, pregnant women with safe shelter and a comprehensive program of change. Our goal is to empower the powerless, instill dignity where there was shame, and provide tools for a better life. The Tender Life program includes prenatal health care, career guidance, tutoring, counseling, spiritual growth opportunities. I was praying over this, and God clearly whispered to me. He said, this church has saved children from dying. You gave hope to moms who gave up. My hand is completely over anything that the whole church comes together regarding children. I lost it when he spoke to me. I just did. I'm just seeing that our church has come together and rescued children from the brink of death, literally done that financially. And the more I asked people about Tender Life, I'm like, oh yeah, do you know about Tender Life? And I started hearing stories. Some people are like, oh, I still deliver food there. Oh, I read books there. And I'm like, did you know they do that? No, I didn't. Did you do? And there's all these individuals coming together, helping out this Tender Life. And I was like, God, your favor is on us right now because of that. The story of this last year's VBS. Does anyone remember this? It blows my mind every time. VBS did like not really too much marketing, and we just opened it up, and I was like, oh yeah, we'll see how it goes, and if it doesn't go well, we're gonna cancel it. I told my wife that. I was like, this is it. It's one shot, yes or no. And we show up to VBS, and VBS started Monday. On Saturday night, we had two kids signed up. On Sunday night, we had three total kids signed up. And then on Monday, we had 17 kids showed up. Tuesday, we had about 40 kids show up. Wednesday, we were about 48. Thursday, we were about 47. And then Friday, we had about 46-ish. You know what the crazy thing was? Those weren't the same kids the whole week. They were different kids, like, about half of them were the same. There's just different kids intertwining the whole time. And I was just like, that doesn't happen anywhere, God. What is going on? And that was the trigger of there's favor on church. We're coming together as a family to do this. And these kids are involved. So, me being who I am and asking God about this, and I'm answering, this next year's focus, we talk about make the change. That's discipleship. That's preparing for the test. The second part is be the change. Make the change, be the change. Real simple. Make the change, be the change. This year, I really want to dive into the fullness of God's favor. I just do. I want to do things that pull out God's favor in this church. That's what I want to focus on. But the only way to do it is if we come together and it's focused on children. It doesn't happen if it's just me. Okay, it's the fullness of God's favor happens when we're together. We still have God's favor if just me and my wife show up. But the fullness of God's favor is when we come together. That's where it's at. So a few things I want to share about this year. Obviously, we're going to be focused on VBS. That's going to be a major outreach that I want to focus on. Another thing that we're going to be focusing on that has just been burdening my spirit is there's like this apartment complex right over here. Just know there's like all these apartments and housing and developments all over here. God's been putting that on my heart a lot. And I would love for us as a church to partner to do stuff there. Do some kids clubs. Take what we do with VBS and how we package that and took it to an Apache reservation. Same sense, take what we do on Sunday morning with children and package that over there every once in a while. Just have some. If you've ever driven around there or like walked, I prayer walk over there, I drive over there whenever I get a chance. If you go over there, there isn't just like a kid that kind of wanders around. There is a herd of children running around over there. And I'm like, where are your parents, kids? And they're like running across the street and there's like tag. And I'm like, man, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. We're going to go over there. Okay? So I thought it was crazy. So, was it Nakia or Patty? Someone said during Halloween, asked every single person that came here during our trunk or treat where they came from, how they get here, where they hear about it, blah, blah, all the above. Do you know, what was it, 50%? 50% of everyone that came to the trunk or treat, 50% came because they saw one flyer taped to one door in the apartment complex on around a corner. So only two neighbors could really see where that poster was. I'm like, yeah, I saw this poster everyone kept talking about over there. And so we want to come here because there's nothing else to do. I'm like, what? There was a poster on a door? That's how we got 50% of our attendance came from? It's like, okay, we'll be back. So that's, I just wanted to share that. Something else Patty and I have been praying about, and I'm going to try to like speed this up because we're running out of time here. Something that's been on our hearts is it's this organization called Xela Aid, X-E-L-A, Xela Aid. You can say Exela, whatever. I don't know how you want to call it. Xela Aid. I'm totally pronouncing it wrong too. But I'm saying it right. Okay. It's this organization in Guatemala that started up there because they saw a need for children in Guatemala. They saw this need that the highest education level for children their ages were 7 years old. So they said, well, we can make a difference by offering them an ability to give them the school supplies and free medical supplies for them. So like what are those called? What are they called? The shot, inoculations. So they take care of medical. If a kid gets hurt, they can go to the doctor right away during school hours. There's food during that time. And this organization, this is the national average, not Guatemala City, but the entire national average went from 7 years old to 17 years old because of this organization. And so they have this partnership where if anyone wants to partner with it, for $380, that's rounded up by like $3, $380, you can send one child to one school year, and that covers all their school supplies and food during school and all healthcare issues. So it's $380. So I wanted to partner with that. Like, we can do that. Like, we can do that as a church. And so we're shifting things around. So naturally, a percentage of our tithe goes to that now. Also, here's what's really neat. So I want to partner and kind of marry Make the Change, Be the Change together. So with the Lectio Divina journals, we worked it out to where we got a ton of these donated for free. They're actually worth $10, and then that's not including shipping and handling and taxes. But they're $10 normally, but they're free to us. However, if you want to, I would love if you still paid the $10 they cost and send the 100% 10 for 10, $10 to the Shela Aid kids. So that way, every time we get 38 people reading their Bible, we send a kid to go study for a year. Is that cool? I love that. So, Shela Aid, apartment complexes, VBS, also a couple other things that we want to be focusing on for Be the Change is this. The back house, we're working on all these projects over the last couple years. We got the heater, we got the AC, the roofer said we're just waiting on the permit, and as soon as it clears, they're going to do it. She just got back. She said her time frame is in a couple weeks. It could even start in like 2 weeks, but they're going to turn it over in like 3 days. So we're just waiting on the permit stuff. And I want to apologize. So you have to put in the owner's information. I filled it out. It's like, oh yeah, Matt Russell, blah, blah. Realize later it's Foursquare. So I just want to apologize on that. That was my fault, in case you're wondering why is this taking longer. So I apologize. I'm sorry. So with the back house, what we want to do is next Sunday, we're going to have a bunch of projects in the back house, different things we want to work on, different things we're going to unpack. We want to recreate it to make it like a VBS every Sunday, to where the kids are moving and their mind and spirit is being stimulated every like 5 minutes by a different activity. Okay? So that's our goal behind it, is creating like a VBS on Sundays. So that when we go to these neighborhoods and they come in, it's the same thing on Sunday as it is over there. Okay? Anyways, we want to clean up back there and do a bunch of projects and make the room just look really cool and inviting for children and families. We're going to be setting up a work week, which the dates, the 11th through the 15th of January. If you have any time to come in during that week, you're saying, hey, you know what? I'm free on a Tuesday for a couple hours. I'm going to come over. I'll help out. I would love that. All right? I'm going to be working all day throughout that week. And if you have time, man, bring it on. I would love help with that. Let's come together and see the favor of God move. Another area that we want to be focusing on this next year is Victoria Care Center. For Sunday, every single month, we go over there. Sterling leads it out, Sterling and Leah. They host a service for people that really don't have families that come and visit them too often, and they love it. We do the stockings and we sing carols during Christmas time, and we're looking at trying to do something during the summer too, and we've talked about that, and we're still figuring that out. The favor of God is activated when we all come together. All right. Last point. Wrap it up. Okay. You have the privilege to take the test to prove you can be trusted to operate the vehicle. Point number 4, the vehicle. The word I have for 2016 is license. It means an authority has been given to you and the privilege to drive the vehicle of change in your life. A transportation from where you are to where you're called to go. That's this idea. As we take this test of loving kindness, we're licensed to move the vehicle of change in our lives. And I'm going to kind of go through this kind of quickly. Joshua 4, verse 8 says, so the men did as Joshua had commanded them. They took 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan River, one for each tribe, just as the Lord had told Joshua. They carried them to the place where they camped for the night and constructed the memorial there. Joshua also set up another pile of 12 stones in the middle of the Jordan at the place where the priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant were standing, and they were there to this day. The priests who were carrying the Ark stood in the middle of the river until all the Lord's commands that Moses had given to Joshua were carried out. Meanwhile, the people hurried across the riverbed. And when everyone was safely on the other side, the priest crossed over with the ark of the Lord as the people watched. Two things I just want to bring out of this is vehicle of change. How to move from where you're at to where God is calling you to. Vehicle of change. Licensed to move. Licensed to operate. Licensed to start moving forward rather than stopping and complaining and grumbling and being bitter at the world. A couple things that I pull out of the story, and I'm trying to hurry. Ran out of time. Sorry. If anyone has any like pot roast going. But I thought this was interesting. The people had been wandering in a desert with the promise of a permanent home that God had for them. Their obstacle was the Jordan River, and up until this point, they hadn't crossed over it yet. And all of a sudden, they cross over this dry riverbed into the promised land, and the river closes. And I thought it was interesting, and I thought it was worth pointing out, because we can get the idea that, oh, once I make it past this obstacle that I'm facing, this hurdle, I'm good to go. But did you know the people faced the Jordan? Then what? They crossed over Jordan, and then they faced Jericho? From Jordan to Jericho. From one thing to the next. They were in the promised land, but they're still facing stuff. I want to point out, God's going to move us forward in this church. But don't think that makes you exempt from facing things on this earth. Okay? And then the last point. This is it. Home stretch. Everyone say home stretch. Vision Sunday. Ready? This is it. They get to the other side, and then God says, go back to the middle of your obstacle and get 12 stones out of the river. Go back. You just told me to go over. Are you kidding? I have to go back now? So then they go back to the junk that they just, the barrier that they just crossed over, pulled out 12 stones, went back across to this location, the land that they enter on was called Gilgal, and they're headed toward Jericho, and they're in Gilgal, and they set up this monument of 12 stones. But did you know, in research, I always assumed that the stones were set up like Ventura stones. Only people from Ventura know Ventura stones. You know, there's no stones stacked at Huntington. Stones stacked? Oh, that's just Ventura. So that's not how they set it up. In research, they actually set up the stones in a circle. The name of Gilgal, where they're standing at, means circular. The stones represented doubt to belief, but they were set up in a circle. And I was thinking about this. The vehicle of change, the movement that God pulls us through in this life. It's not about doubt moving to belief and it's done, but it's actually set up in a circle that he pulls us through these tests over and over, moving from doubt to belief, doubt to belief. And it's a circular thing. It's this continuing thing. And it goes over and over because he wants to trust us with people. He wants to trust us with our calling. And I thought it was interesting, even more so because 12 represents a lot of things, but it also represents the year. 12, January, February, March, April, May, June, July. There are things that happened in 2015 that you're thanking God is 2016 now, and you can say, thank you, Jesus, that's behind me. Right? Amen. Vehicle. Do you know vehicle? One of my favorite things about a vehicle is a rearview mirror. Small glimpse of the past with an overwhelming glimpse of the future. But most people want to drive a car where the window is a rearview mirror with a small glimpse of the future. You didn't catch it. You got it? Look at the future. Focus on the future with a glimpse of the past. I wanted everyone to pull out their license today, and we can all show each other our license on our photos. And Jack, he was like, oh, no. And I was thinking about the license. I was thinking about licenses, and here's what I came to. It's embarrassing. It's like someone's like, I look terrible. Same with the things we go through. It's ugly. But it's proof we made it through, and it's proof we can make it through again. Vehicle for change. My goodness. Here's what we're going to do. We are going to have communion today. Celebrate on the first Sunday of the year. Worshiping King, come on up forward. We're going to celebrate communion in worship style. So stay in your seats, and the ushers are going to pass out communion. I know we're running long, and I'm saying a lot today, but I thank you for your patience. And I think because I believe God's moving today. He's speaking to us. So can we stand up and take communion, enter into worship? Ushers, can you come forward and pass it out?